You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. Today we have Burlington Mayor Murro Weinberger on the show to help us break down what's happening in Burlington and answer your questions. One of the biggest stories to come out of Burlington this week involves the clearing of the Sears Lane encampment. The encampment had been allowed on city property since last spring after officials acknowledged a lack of housing for people experiencing homelessness. But things changed in mid-October when the city told the roughly 20 residents of the encampment they had to go. The original deadline was set for October 19th and then was extended to this past Tuesday. The city says it's been working with residents to find them more stable housing, but advocates for the Sears Lane encampment say the mayor and the city did a poor job presenting information about crime and safety. We will have the Burlington police chief on later in the show, but now I want to welcome Burlington Mayor Murro Weinberger. Mayor Weinberger, thanks for being here today.
Connor, thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you.
So let's just start. Obviously, the Sears Lane encampment is a hot-button issue in Burlington. Tuesday's deadline for people to leave the Sears Lane encampment has since passed. Can you give us an update on where we are with that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Connor. And, you know, let me start by stepping back a little bit and just making sure it's clear to your listeners sort of where we're at with this effort and how it fits into really the larger, very important debates we're having here about housing and homelessness in Burlington and Chittenden County. One of my very top priorities since coming into office almost a decade ago was creating more housing. I believe our system is badly broken and we have a huge supply problem. We don't have nearly enough homes to make good on the idea that housing should be a human right. We've tried to address that in every way I know how. We've built more than 1,500 homes in Burlington over the last decade. We have focused specifically on dramatically expanding services for the chronically homeless. We did that to just name a few quick examples. We opened the first low barrier winter warming shelter about 6 years ago. Over the last 18 months, we have expanded that to be the first year round low barrier shelter that exists in Burlington. We took exceptional steps during the pandemic to turn our recreational campground at North Beach into a COVID safe homeless shelter through the early months of the pandemic. We have created a coordinated entry system so that information about homeless individuals can be better shared among individuals. And it was in that spirit that we have been attempting to further expand services for the chronically homeless at Sears Lane, a city-owned property, over the last year. A year ago, I brought to a state funding board a proposal that would have created a new shelter, new low-barrier, COVID-safe shelter there. And unfortunately, that by a split vote just failed to get funding. In the wake of that effort, we tried again this spring, as you said, to bring some services to this land at Sears Lane and support individuals who found that to be their best housing option. And we did take some steps in that direction. We brought dumpsters and porta potties, and we worked with social service providers to provide some food. I wanted to do what much more, frankly. I wanted to have real management so that this could be a safe place for people to live.
So what got in the way of you doing more?
Excuse me, what's that, Connor?
I said, so what got in the way of you doing more? You said you wanted to do more, but essentially the camp is gone.
Yeah. Well, what got in the way is a couple things, Connor. First, the effort to partner with other nonprofit organizations, service providers to have a safe managed campsite failed. We put out a request for proposals for those services after months of talking with local nonprofits, and not a single organization responded. We didn't stop there. We tried to negotiate specifically with one nonprofit that had showed the most interest, some kind of partnership. Unfortunately, that organization suddenly was going through a leadership transition and wasn't in place to do that, to partner with us anymore.
So what I want to ask, really get to the heart of this problem was you designated this area for people experiencing homelessness, a place to stay, and then essentially you took it away from them, I guess semi-abruptly. So, I really just want to get to what went into the decision to get rid of or to close the encampment.
Yeah. Well, I hear you, Connor. Two things. One was our efforts to bring services to the site, to have a successful management of the site, were not successful. And then secondly, the site became very unsafe. And it was a series that safety manifested as a couple quite dramatic incidents that involved law enforcement and threats to first responders. And it also, but it wasn't just that. And I think that's been somewhat misunderstood. The day-to-day life in this encampment was very unsafe. Our fire chief came to the city council this week and testified that someone would have died there this winter had we not taken action because of the canisters of gas, the way in which structures had been erected without attention to fire safety regulations, because of the unsanitary public health conditions that existed on the site. It was not a place that was safe for campers. It was not a place that was safe for neighbors, and it was not safe for first responders. And it became clear that the best action that I could take would be to end the encampment and to find assistance and better housing for the people that were living there, mobilize emergency resources. And in the wake of that decision 2 weeks ago, that's exactly what we've done. The update from the site this morning from CVOEO, the nonprofit working one-on-one with everyone that had been living there, is that 31 individuals have been connected with assistance. There are only two people left on site right now, and one of them has a plan to leave by the end of the day. We're basically down to working with one person that does not have a clear housing plan at this point.
Let's go to Fareed in Burlington. Fareed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Connor. I have several questions for the mayor, but mainly I want to understand how we got to this point. We have been committed to reimagining public safety in Burlington. And the solution, this final solution that the mayor came up with, is really that there's nothing new. This is police-led eviction of our unhoused neighbors. These are people who are already traumatized, and you are re-traumatizing them again. I have been at the encampment the last 2 weeks, every day cooking and feeding people and working with the mutual aid groups that are taking care of our neighbors. And was it realistic to like expect somebody to come in? That the RFP that the mayor was talking about was only available for 2 weeks. I don't think any agency in their right mind will look at what the liability and like what the camp was and come up with a full plan in 2 weeks. And finally, what I have seen also, you know, it's not just an encampment. There is a community there. And we recognize that. And a lot of mutual aid groups in Burlington, as well as just individuals who live around the area, have been like showing up. We have been clearing out the campsite. We have been connecting with the residents there. We have been coming up with like a code of conduct that they were all agreeing to hold each other accountable by. I want to ask the mayor if he would reconsider the closing the RFP and let us come up with a plan.
Mayor, a lot to process there, but how do you respond?
So thank you, Fareed. Thank you, Connor. There's a lot to respond to there.
Let's just break it down by saying, could this have been handled differently? I think that was the first point Fareed tried to make. Mm-hmm.
How are we transforming public safety? And I do think one of the ways that we have gotten to the positive outcome that I mentioned before of all but one people now, one of the people there having found a better housing solution than before, is we have changed the city's public health, public safety structure. We have social workers now, four social workers, community service liaisons working for the city, and whereas we used to have just one, and they have been integral in working with folks there and helping them find better options over the last couple of weeks. As far as the larger question, is there something, can we try again here? I absolutely am committed in it and will continue to be persistent on ensuring that homelessness in Chittenden County is is rare. And when it does happen, it's brief. Again, we have for years been focused on expanding the services for the chronically homeless. We have done, we have important ways added to the system. We still don't have the system working as well as it should. And frankly, that's part of the reason why we did not succeed at the managing campground this year. Is that there are gaps in the system. There's not a shared vision amongst the city and the community that works with the homeless on how to end homelessness. One of the reasons I'm grateful to have another term to keep working is, you know, we have gotten part of the way there. We celebrated over the last year the end of veterans homelessness in Chittenden County about a year ago. We have to finish the job, and we can do it. We can become one of these growing number of communities around the country that gets this right. Over the next couple of weeks, I will be rolling out new plans to double down on these strategies to end chronic homelessness.
What about Fareed's other point about closing the RFP and leaving it up to mutual aid groups?
So, well, a couple of things. First of all, I want to be really clear that this was not a two-week process. We talked for months and months with the entire community, professional community that works with the homeless about a managed campground. And we had one-on-one talks with every organization that we could think of that might be able to play that role. And it was only then that the RFP was opened. There was plenty of time for an organization to respond successful if they wanted to. Unfortunately, none of them thought they could be successful at that site. I certainly appreciate, and I think it's really very impressive and admirable, some of the volunteer work that Fareed and dozens of others have been doing to provide additional services to the people living at Sears Lane and elsewhere in the community. And I really welcome this idea that they would become part of the system that is trying to provide, you know, day in, day out, the services that are necessary to protect people the most vulnerable in this community. And
I'm going to cut you off right there. We have a lot of calls right now. I want to get to Jamie in Burlington. Jamie, you're on the phone with the mayor.
Hi, Mayor. I just want to clarify a few things from my perspective, because I feel the situation is being misrepresented. The assistance that the city has provided for residents who have left is temporary assistance. And it's assistance that they are taking because they are coerced by the alternative being forcible removal. So I don't see this as actual assistance. I see it as you're still continuing to coerce people to leave a place they would otherwise not like to leave. If you have concerns about the safety of the site, such as fire safety, you would hook up and invest money into getting city's electricity here so that there isn't a fire concern, not removing people. So to answer Fareed's question, yes, you could have handled this differently, and you are not handling it in a way that is helpful. You're handling it in a way that is harmful. And I've worked in the nonprofit sector specifically with people facing homelessness, and it makes sense to me that none of the profits picked up this job. And I don't think it's fair for the government to relieve themselves of their duty and their burden onto the nonprofit sector, which is really, really overwhelmed and underfunded. So I think it still befalls on the city to make sure that this place is a safe site. And I don't care about the low barrier efforts you've done. There needs to be a space that is a no barrier refuge for people who cannot access other services, because there will always be people who need a no barrier place to go. And this could actually be a great place to concentrate those people and access them to greater services. But so I needed to clarify my perspective on those things, because I find it very distressing that you're focusing more on what you think are the positives rather than the negatives. But my question is that I find it concerning that knowing there's a court case today about whether what you are doing right now with the forcible removal is even legal, I want to know how you want to show the public your competency as mayor when, after knowing something might not be legal, you didn't choose to halt the forcible removal and you chose to continue anyway. That, to me, is concerning.
Jamie, thank you so much for your question. Mayor, how do you respond to what he just said?
Well, again, the caller said a lot. I would say this. I want to be really clear. When I made the decision that the only way to keep campers, neighbors, and first responders safe was to end the encampment, we went to the state and ask for emergency funds separate from all the other emergency housing programs that are out there for the Sears Lane campers. And we've been successful at that. And again, 31 people have secured assistance. And I guess I would compare the statements of the caller to statements that numerous campers have made in the media about their appreciation of this assistance and how it is clearly a better option than what Sears Lane had become for them to move into these other housing options. Secondly, the caller is right, and it concerns me that so far the assistance is only 1 month of assistance. I'll tell you that we are already beginning our advocacy to see that extended. There are a number of sort of technical reasons why assistance is given out in 30-day allotments, and the city is going to feel, I feel personal responsibility for these individuals that have been at Sears Lane, and we're going to keep fighting for them and ensure that they do not lose their assistance in the middle of the winter. And then longer term, I do actually think there's an area of agreement again between what the caller was saying and where I'm at. I don't think I'm not sure there's been a Vermont elected official that has been more consistently and actively in favor of low barrier, no barrier options for the chronically homeless than I have over a decade now. And I haven't given up on that. I stick with things until we get them right. And we've made real progress with how we serve the chronically homeless, but the system is still not as good as it needs to be. And frankly, as other communities are. And again, over the next couple of weeks, we will be rolling out plans for redoubling our efforts in this area, and they will include, I think, very likely expanded low barrier, no barrier options.
Let's go to Aaron in Arlington. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm listening from afar in southern Vermont, and my involvement with homelessness or barrier-free options is very little, but what I've heard is that the mayor made a very difficult decision and went against some of his principles that he's been fighting for a very long time. And I'd like to commend him for making a decision that is in the safety of the community and of public assets like first responders. And that must have been very difficult to do. And it sounds like you're really engaged in problem solving. And I hope you don't stop fighting for solutions, because in a way it sounds like you ended homelessness in this encampment by making this decision. So I applaud you.
I appreciate the caller's understanding. I mean, this has been very, very challenging. It was a very difficult decision. I'm confident it was the right one, and I'm more confident that today than 2 weeks ago, because we have been able to get immediate help for everyone living on the site.
We will continue our conversation with Burlington Mayor Merrill Weinberger, but we're going to shift our focus to public safety in Burlington, as it continues to be a major concern for residents. Back in 2020, Burlington Progressives backed the shrinking of the Burlington police force by 30% through attrition, making the total approved cops 74, including those at the airport. But earlier this month, Burlington City Council agreed to allow the department to hire up to 87 police officers. CNA Report, a report commissioned by the city, recommended an authorized headcount of 77 to 80 sworn officers, not including those at the police officer. That report was released earlier this month, and some say the city needs more police on Church Street, while critics say the city is already over-policed. I now want to welcome Burlington Police Chief John Murad to the show. Chief, welcome to the Vermont Edition.
Hi, thank you very much for having me, Connor, and thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, for having me aboard as well.
So I just want to start, Chief, with your reaction to where the city council ended up in raising the cap on police officers following the release of the CNA report.
So that was a really good night for the police department. I think after a very long time of a lot of reflection, 18 months plus of working to try to look at what our public safety posture is as a community, of addressing the outcome of that city council resolution from June of 2020, and watching as our ranks depleted very, very rapidly and by more than 30%, it was gratifying to have a moment of saying, you know what, we've had a professional assessment at this point. We have different ideas about what the numbers are. We've seen the results of having those numbers depleted, and we're reevaluating. I think that puts us on a good foot to move forward from. But it's certainly going to be something that, that takes some time. In the meantime, though, however, during that period, we've created a lot of different capacities. The mayor has been instrumental in bringing to fruition our public safety continuity plan, which includes unarmed, unsworn resources. It includes mental health experts, many of whom were instrumental in handling the situation at Sears Lane so that armed officers did not have to be involved in that process.
I'm curious, when you talk about reevaluating the police department, what does that mean in terms of reform? Like, what should the residents of Burlington expect when you talk about reevaluating what public safety and what the police department looks like?
Well, I think that it is in part a look at that public safety continuity plan, an examination of whether or not we can take certain kinds of calls for service that in the past have had police response and instead make them applicable to people who don't come who armed, don't come with enforcement as the automatic outcome, or not even automatic, but the presumed outcome. That's one aspect. I think that this report that came from the company that did the assessment required by that resolution more than a year ago has flagged a number of places where we can dig into certain directives, certain policies, and re-examine those. I think all of those are a component of reimagining and reevaluating public safety in our community. But I think what we're really fortunate about is the fact that we're starting from a place that most communities wish they had. This department has long been a leader in most of these kinds of endeavors. It has embraced community policing. It has embraced training about bias. It has embraced different kinds of de-escalation tactics. We led the state with regard to our use of force policy, a policy that has now been essentially adopted by the state in large measure, and so that there's now a mandatory all-state policy that superseded ours but borrowed heavily from ours. I'm very proud about those kinds of improvements and ongoing efforts by this department that have been something that we've embraced for years and even decades. And so we're in a good place from which we can build in order to continue to improve and make this department responsive to the entirety of its community.
Now, I want to talk strategic planning when it comes to the Burlington Police Department. I know that based on some conversations I've had with residents, that they said that it appears that you moved Burlington Police away from Church Street to allow more crime to happen so that it would be, so that it would look like there was more crime happening because you diverted where resources went to make the city more comfortable about having hiring more police. How is there, A, is there any accuracy to that? And B, how, what's the decision to remove police from Church Street and take them in the other wings of the city?
There is no accuracy to that. I reject that. We had a situation where our officer numbers were being drastically depleted. You know, Austin, Texas was also similarly defunded by its city council, and it has lost approximately 17% of its officer corps. And in the process, it has unilaterally stopped responding to a host of non-immediate life safety kinds of calls for service, including past burglaries, including various kinds of theft, including most quality of life issues. We did not do that, despite the fact that unlike Austin and its 17% decrease, we've lost more than 32%. We have maintained our ability to prioritize response at times where we are not able to respond to some of those kinds of calls for service, those lower level non-life safety calls, but we have not done so unilaterally. We have not just simply said we're not going to respond to those. We've maintained our ability to have response the best as we are able. With regard to Church Street, what you're discussing is a misrepresentation in a media article that refused to acknowledge that we don't have area officers any longer because we usually don't have enough officers on to cover the five areas of the city. Area integrity is a key component of community policing. And it's one of the components I said during the discussions about defunding last June that we would lose if we were going to have our headcount diminish. We would not be able to dig into individual areas of the city with singular officers steadily assigned to those areas where they get to learn the people and the problems and the potential of those areas. And instead, we are in a posture where we routinely have only enough officers to divide the city into north and south and cover north and south. So with regard to D area, which is the downtown area, it's not that we took officers out of D area, it's that we didn't have officers to do area patrol after a certain point. At no time, however, prior to 02:45, which is when our midnight shift takes over alone from the evening shift, did we not have officers in D area. It was a diminution of the number of officers available at any given time, and that was a issue with the total number of officers available. We have situations where we're making deployment determinations on a case-by-case basis. We have a limited number of officers. We have 15 square miles of city and 44,000 residents, and we do put our officers where we see the most kind of activity, but we also have to pay attention to the rest of that city and the rest of the residents who live in it, many of whom were not supportive of this idea of diminishing the police department. So what we do have now is we've posted certain kinds of overtime in order to try to have more presence on Church Street. We've been putting officers on foot again in that location through overtime usage. But with regard to area coverage, it's not something we can always do. We simply often don't have enough officers on any given shift to cover all five areas and instead have to cover north-south.
Another topic that I want to bring up is the ACLU of Vermont has been very critical of how the police department has been presenting crime data. ACLU General Counsel Jay Diaz has accused you of propagating a false narrative by saying, quote, "We've seen the doubling of the number of police press releases about crime. We've seen serious inflammatory rhetoric used by city councilors during city council meetings, and by the media to look at the data." So what's your response in Jay Diaz is saying that he is seeing double the amount of press releases from your department?
Well,
I'd like to address that one, Connor. From my perspective, ACLU Vermont was just completely out of touch with that letter, with what is going on the ground here in Burlington. And that report, you know, basically completely ignored the dramatic increase in gunfire incidents that we've seen in the city this year. It said nothing about the really sharp and troubling increase in burglaries that we've experienced here in Burlington. I welcome that when the CNA report came out, this independent consultant, they weighed in on this directly and said the police department had reached such low staffing levels that it made sense that they were sounding, you know, quote unquote, alarm bells about the staffing situation. Anyone who has spent significant amounts of time here in Burlington this summer knows there has been a real change at significant times a day for significant periods in the sense of lawlessness, and that this is very concerning and something that we need to turn around. And that letter just really missed the facts on the ground.
Do you have that? That was Burlington Mayor Mira Weinberger stepping in to help the chief. Chief, do you agree with what the mayor just said?
Absolutely. Part of the criticism there is about the data that we make transparent and public. All of our data is public. We have a transparency and data portal on the page, on the city website page, on the police department page. That includes an open data portal for the city, an open data dashboard, that includes reports and presentations that are made, and all of the numbers that are cited, many of which were done in strange aggregations and combinations that we couldn't really recreate, are numbers that we've shared. And my position has been consistent. The overall incident volume was going down, has been going down. It's been picking up this year. It still hasn't surpassed last year's, although it has from June through October. We've had more incidents this year than last year, June through October. But it wasn't about all incidents. It's about our priority one incidents, which are higher this year than any year since 2017. Furthermore, These facts are not fear, they are facts. And with regard to press releases, frankly, that's a mode of transparency, which I'm embracing and I'm happy to have more indications of what the men and women of this department do shared with the public, so there can be an understanding of what our role is, an appreciation for the way we perform it, and questions about whether or not there are changes that we can make.
Right now, we have Burlington Police Chief John Murad on the line. We also have Burlington Mayor Merrill Weinberger. So, Chief, I'm wondering, where is the disconnect in how the Burlington police are perceived and what the reality is of what's happening in Burlington?
That's a great question, Connor. That's a terrific question. And I really appreciate that question because it's one that I have struggled with and thought about. I think that the ability of the department to tell its story is something that we all need to work on, and that we need to be able to have a stronger handle on, so that we can let our neighbors know the truth about this department and the men and women in it, which is that we exist to serve those neighbors, to keep them safe. The purpose of police is to keep people safe by preventing and responding to crime and disorder with and for our neighbors. And we do a lot to make that happen. We do it with the support of community groups. We do it with the great support of the mayor and the administration. We do it with the support of the very folks that we serve. And the fact that some degree of that was not being made clear, or that it was swept aside in a moment of great national passion after a horrible, horrible murder and crime that occurred, is something that we are now struggling with the repercussions of, and will be struggling with those repercussions for some time, because while the headcount has been changed, it's going to take a while for us to get back to that level and be able to really offer the services that our neighbors have come to expect and deserve from our police department.
That's Burlington Police Chief John Murad. John, thank you so, or Chief, sorry. Thank you so much for being on Vermont Edition today.
Thank you.
We're going to continue our conversation with Burlington Mayor Merrill Weinberger. But before we go back to the phones, and listeners, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Before we get to the phones, I want to ask you about where we are with the redevelopment of the future of City Place in Burlington. I mean, are you still confident that the developers are going to be able to make that happen? And do you think we'll see actual construction start anytime soon?
Thanks, Connor. The City Place project obviously is one in which the developers of that project, and it's sometimes forgotten, this is a private project on private land with a secondary aspect that involves the creation of some significant new public infrastructure. The developer has struggled for years, and we are still in a period of some uncertainty about exactly when they will start and what the future looks like. That said, over the course of 2021, we have made substantial progress with the project in a couple of big respects. One, early in the year, my efforts to hold the developer accountable for their delays and their failures to live up to the commitments that they had made to the city of Burlington by taking them to court was successful. And we reached a settlement early in the year in which the city has taken control of substantial amounts of land within that project for the building of the new streets. We also secured a contract that is sitting in escrow from SD Ireland that essentially gives the city the ability to, at no cost to the taxpayers, demand that the developer go out and build those reconnected new streets for no cost if they continue to fail. My hope is that they won't. There's certainly a lot of discussions going on, and we see many indications that they are moving closer to starting construction, and we're wishing them well and supporting them in any way that we can to get there, and that their success is the city's success. Their success will result in hundreds of new homes. It will result in substantial new jobs and millions of dollars of new property tax revenue. Would be by far the largest property taxpayer in the city if and when they succeed. One other major obstacle by settling another lawsuit that was standing in the way. So it's all in their hands, and we hope that they deliver.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Annie in Burlington. Annie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a few questions for the mayor, and I'll be very brief. I want to respond to a comment you made earlier where you said that there was, quote, plenty of time for local organizations to submit RFPs. I'm a clinical social worker, and I've worked in these agencies for the last 8 years, and I can tell you that 2 weeks is not a long enough window to produce any proposal that would have realistic, meaningful ideas in it. And so I'd like to ask you why you closed that window after 2 weeks. This is my daughter with me right now. My second question is, why has Burlington Police Department killed more people under your administration than under all other administrations in history combined? And my third question is, would you like to come to dinner at Sears Lane tonight at 6 p.m. and meet members of your community?
Mayor, a lot to dissect there.
Well, you know, again, I mean, I've addressed it before, but since the caller's raised it again, this was not a 2 week process working with the nonprofits. It was a multi-month process involving numerous conversations, and it was very clear no one was going to respond to that if we had held it open longer. Secondly, look, there were two really tragic incidents that took place since I've been mayor that involved Burlingtonians who were having acute mental health episodes. The police responded, and there were officer-involved shootings, and those individuals died. And they were terrible tragedies, and they caused a real, particularly after the second one, a deep soul searching within the police department about how we respond to these issues. We completely changed the way we respond to mental health incidents since then. We joined with some of the most progressive law enforcement organizations in the country to really rewrite the curriculum on how officers are trained to respond to those situations. We invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in new equipment, non-lethal equipment, to help us manage situations like that in a better way. And we haven't, you know, it's been years now, and thankfully we haven't had another incident like that. And we're as committed to that kind of response as ever. I mean, I think that's a good example of how reform of the Burlington Police Department, progressive efforts to make the Burlington Police Department an outstanding 21st century police department, did not begin a year ago in the wake of the terrible murder of George Floyd. In fact, they've been going on for many years. And if anything, in important respects, the dramatic defunding of the officers of the police department has really made our reform efforts harder and set us back and slowed reform efforts down in some ways. Hopefully now that the council has finally reversed course and raised the officer number back up in the range that I've been advocating throughout that time, we are stabilizing and can begin to make steady progress once again.
I'm going to let you answer the dinner invitation off air. But I'm just wondering, when it comes to the police in particular, there's still a population of Burlingtonians that don't trust and are fearful of the police because of their own personal interactions. I mean, these are real life, real, valid, genuine experiences that people have. And it just seems that the city just has ignoring these calls for attention from these communities that say we're being over-policed and we're not being treated like everybody else.
Connor, I agree with, I think, the premise of your question there, that I think there, and something that I have been saying, far from ignoring, saying and working towards in every way I know how throughout this very challenging period, is that we have we do not have a consensus on what the future of public safety should be in this community. And yes, there are definitely communities that within the city that do not feel supported. And in fact, at times there are some individuals that feel unsafe with our police department, and that there is this substantial gap between the way the police department talks about and attempts to promote public safety and what some parts of our community believe experience and believe. And that is a huge problem. And we are not ignoring it. We have, you know, attempted to, in response to this concern, we have completely rewritten our use of force policy, attempting to put much more emphasis on de-escalation to reduce the number of times that the police use force when they're interacting with the public. We have started community conversations between police officers and members of the community to try to get to the heart of that misunderstanding. We've sent officers to on trips to, you know, for example, to Montgomery to see the museum there about deep racial injustice and lynching in America, to try to infuse our officers with an understanding of how they are viewed and what the legacy that we are working under and the need to attempt to fix. So this is hard work. I am by no means think we have fully succeeded or figured this out, but it's not being ignored.
Let's go to Connor in Montpelier. Connor, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. Well, you're on the line with the mayor.
Hi, Mr. Weinberg. I was hoping to speak with the chief, but I guess I missed him. I was attacked pretty brutally in Burlington and ended up with a TBI. And Sarah George has refused to prosecute. And I'm just wondering what's going on with crime. You know, you guys are saying you need more police officers, which, you know, you don't. But even when you have open and shut cases, literally on film, nobody's willing to even go forward with it.
Mayor, I guess, is there anything that can be done for people that feel victims of a crime in Burlington outside of the police, I guess, is what we're trying to get at?
Well, of course, I'd have to know more details about the caller to understand exactly what happened in their circumstance. And I would invite Connor to be in touch with the mayor's office if they would like us to explore this particular case. I sense that what Connor is alluding to is a larger issue about that we are struggling with right now, about how we hold people accountable when serious crimes are committed, how we hold people accountable for bad behaviors, how we keep the public safe when there are individuals that, because of substance abuse or mental health reasons, represent a threat to themselves and others. There's no doubt that the whole system for addressing safety is under great strain right now and is, I think, having a harder time working than any point that I've seen over the last decade. Because of this, we, in partnership, you know, at the suggestion of the Burlington Police Commission, we're going to be holding a mental health summit in the coming months here. And we really, one of the things that we need to get at is how do we keep the public safe when when prison does not seem like the right or practical option for certain individuals, and on the other hand, we don't have the mental health facilities to ensure the safety of individuals and those around them. We're in a real challenge with that right now, and it's got to change. And we're going to be hosting the summer aimed directly at that.
Now, something else that I want to talk about is the future of Burlington High School. You sent out a letter to the board recommending that the so-called Gateway Block site, currently the site of Memorial Auditorium and the city's library. Why did you make that decision? Why there?
Well, Connor, I want to be really clear what that letter said. They were in a process of looking at dozens of sites across the city. And I said, if you're going to go through that process, I really encourage you to take a close look and explore the Gateway Block Memorial Auditorium site, because I thought the site had the potential to be a great location for our high school, a location that could have educational benefits because of its, you know, closer proximity to so many other institutions in town, and the potential of community-based learning, something that many people are excited about because of the environmental benefits of having a downtown school as opposed to other more suburban locations. And potentially, I thought there was actually maybe some real cost efficiencies in locating there. Since sending that letter, some of that, you know, that exploration has happened. And I do think the high school, having looked closer at it and really kind of clarified what their priorities and interests are, it seems increasingly, my sense is very soon we're going to hear that they are going to likely not select that site and find a way to use the property they already own out on Institute Road. And I think that's certainly an understandable decision, and one that I, if that's what they conclude, I'll fully support it, in that the it's a real problem that in this community right now we have only a temporary high school. My daughter is a sophomore there. I'm very appreciative of the work that Superintendent Tom Flanagan and the board did to set that up in a remarkably short period of time. It's not a situation that should last for years and years. And so they are right to be focused on getting a new permanent building built as soon as possible.
We only have a few minutes left, so I want to ask you just a few more questions. Can you talk about what the city's plan is for allocating funds received from the American Rescue Plan Act?
Yeah, I can. This is a really something that the city of Burlington is deeply thankful and appreciative for, and we are really appreciate the work that our federal delegation did to ensure that Vermont got, you know, at least its fair share, and probably some other states might argue more than its fair share of relief resources. Burlington is getting a direct allocation of $27 million. A significant amount of that was necessary to address the financial holes that the pandemic had caused over the last couple of years. We have about $15 million that remains that we are looking to invest in a way that has maximum impact, that addresses, that ensures as we come out of this pandemic, we do so in a racially just way, that we do so in a sustainable way. And we are right now in the process polling the whole city. We have a survey out there asking everyone to give input, both general and specific input, about what kind of investments we make with this money. And there's about two more weeks on that survey. I encourage everyone to join the almost 2,000 people that have already filled it out and let us know what you're thinking.
Just really quickly, in 30 seconds, what are you doing these days to decompress from all the stress of being mayor?
Well, thanks, Connor. I mean, this is a challenging time for everyone, and certainly I feel that in this role.
So how are you decompressing?
I will tell you, it's something I don't talk a lot about. I'm a big fan of board games, Connor, and whenever I can, I carve out a couple hours with some good friends, and there are these legacy games that are pretty awesome, so I recommend them.
Mayor, thank you so much. That's Burlington Mayor Merrill Weinberger. Thank you so much for being here.
Connor, it was a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you more in the months to come.
Absolutely. Enjoy those board games. That's all the time we have for today on Vermont Edition. Today's show was directed by James Stewart. Our managing editor is Lydia Brown. We had production assistance from Sam Gilrosen and Anna St. Marie. VPR's digital producers are Lodi Reed and Abigail Giles. Our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Connor Cyrus. I appreciate you listening, and we'll talk again soon.